Welcome to the Mile High Podcast. This is your host, Dr. Daniel Knowles. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for being passionate and excited about all things chiropractic, and especially Mile High Chiropractic. We look forward to seeing you in September at Mile High 2021, and thank you for being a listener. Make sure that whatever channel you are listening to this to, that you hit subscribe, whether it be on Stitcher or iTunes or YouTube. Hit subscribe so you never miss any Mile High Tick. Today, I am super thrilled to be interviewing the one and only Dr. Grant Dennis. Dr. Grant Dennis is quite the impressive chiropractor, and not only is he an incredible practitioner, he's an Amazon bestseller, he's an entrepreneur, he's a philanthropist, he focuses on the upper cervical spine in terms of an analysis protocol, and he's the chief operating officer, COO of the Specific Chiropractic Centers franchise with 15 national clinics. So we're very excited. He's also he's the president of the IFCO, which, as people know, I am a big fan of the International Federation of Chiropractic Organizations, as it is truly the only international chiropractic organization focused on vertebral subluxation and the adjustment. So we're grateful to have him on this podcast, and even more grateful to have him sharing at Mile High this year. Dr. Grant Dennis, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
I appreciate you having me, Danny. I'm super excited to share some information on the podcast today and also maybe bring some value to your viewership. And, you know, I just got to say right off the bat, I'm excited about Mile High in September. Be at higher ground. I've been to Mile High for years now, both as a, you know, even way back as far as being a student, all the way now to coming full circle. I love the Mile High movement and what it stands for. And I'm excited to share. If you're one of those out there on the fence, just make the leap. Just do it. Just do the Nike motto. Just do it. Just register. Just get there. Be decisive, and let's grow together.
Especially since this year we're focusing on the art. I think this is going to be very unique. I've never been to a program in my 25 years in the chiropractic profession professionally where something was completely focused on that. So I think that's going to be super exciting. So let's get to know you a little bit better. Some people know you, some don't. Can you share a little bit with our audience how you found your way into chiropractic?
Yeah, so mine's very non-cliche. I have a very interesting route into chiropractic. You know, I grew up in a medical model. I grew up with a very medically minded family. You know, I didn't grow up seeing a chiropractor. I didn't have a, you know, wow chiropractic story. Chiropractic truly found me, and I'm glad it did, but it chose me and I chose it. And so it, you know, I was very close to going to medical school. I was real close to enrolling in a medical university here. And about 2 or 3 weeks out of doing that, I just had this really weird, conscientious voice on my shoulders saying, this is not what you're supposed to be doing. And I've been one of those that's always followed my gut, followed my intuition, and I'm glad I did. And so I took on a whim to a trip to Parker University, took a tour of the campus. I met a guy named Dr. Gene Giggleman, who a lot of people know, and gave me a campus tour. And from there, it just sort of blossomed into this really weird universal conspiracy to get me to a chiropractic college. And while there, I dug into the green books. I started reading a lot of volume 14, volume 18. I read about BJ's journey, which then sort of led me down this evolution to upper cervical emphasis. I looked at a lot of research. I looked at a lot of things out there. And ultimately, I'm the truest, you know, story of truly, I believe chiropractic truth, you know, chose us all, and we chose chiropractic, but never more so evident with me. And man, I love being a chiropractor. I love seeing the miracles we see in our offices, and I'm certainly glad it's a route. And the universe grabbed me and plucked me out of the world and plugged me into the chiropractic field, and I'm glad it did.
You know, so many people feel that way relative to chiropractic, that chiropractic found them. How did you find your way into the focus of the upper cervical spine and that area of the art of chiropractic?
Yeah, so the art, and that's why I love the theme of this year, you know, the art of, you know, the Raiders of the Lost Art, you know, because it is lost. I feel like the art is so lost just in what I understand it.
Isn't that sad? I mean, it's so, It's so sad.
It is. And I think it's why it's so important that people get to this event and learn from other people and learn their art forms, because my art form is in the area of the upper cervical spine solely as an emphasis, you know, and I say it not as a weird, I think there's this weird connotation, Danny, that people think that there's this weird, the upper cervical people and then everybody else, right? And listen, I've never adjusted below C3, and it's not because first off, I'm 5'6", you know, 170 pounds soaking wet. So early on in my chiropractic journey, the thought of a lumbar roll on a very large man was something I realized I'm probably not going to achieve very well. So how can I perform an art form and provide value to somebody when we have a size difference, right? That's really ultimately where it kind of started. And then what happened was I started reading a lot of research, and I noticed that a lot of the research in chiropractic was on upper cervical research. Well, now I know it's just because when you adjust one bone and you get an outcome, it's very easy to do research on that, right? Very few variables at play. So there was that. Then just as I was reading about BJ early on as a student through volume 18, volume 14, I noticed that early on, a lot of the miracle cases, it seemed, that were being seen in chiropractic were all occurring via the upper cervical spine and BJ's research clinic and that sort of thing. And I was always one of those, Danny, that I didn't want to go into chiropractic and be mediocre. I just have never had a sense of I want to be mediocre in my town. I've always sort of been, you know, just as a former athlete and a competitor, I've always wanted to be the best at whatever I do. And so in my town, I was like, I want to be known as the guy. Like, I want to be known, or the gal, if it's a gal, I want to be known as the person. Like, when somebody's sick and they're suffering and their family member needs answers, I wanted to be the person they made a phone call to. And so I was like, you know, if that's going to be what I want to achieve, I want it to be in the area of the upper cervical spine. I want to own it. I want to know it better than anybody. I want to be able to give what, you know, with BJ, I used to always say that the adjustment with that extra something. I wanted to give somebody that adjustment with that extra something. And I truly believe, you know, my motto in the clinic every day is leave no doubt. Leave no doubt to my clients, my patients, my practice members, that when they leave the door, whether they received an adjustment or not, they were better than they walked in. And we have objective analysis to prove that. We have subjective improvements to know that. But more importantly, life changes that instill value in their lives. And so ultimately, I just kind of found upper cervical by looking at, you know, neurology, looking at, you know, the area of, you know, as far as just blending the science, I wanted to blend the philosophy. And then ultimately, your art forms, the portrayal of how you blend those three things together. And so truly, I mean, I think the upper cervical spine, it's created a wonderful lifestyle for me. I've been able to see, a lot of miracles. But then, you know, it's one of those things, too. Miracles are only happening if you don't expect them. So if you expect them, they happen. I think that truly my evolution to upper cervical was much like mine to chiropractic, because it sort of just found me, snagged me, and I just kind of go with the river current when it pulls me.
Well, I think that's actually good advice, especially when you can be perceptive to it. So now, what are some things about upper cervical analysis that you can share with others to help them be a better chiropractor, regardless of what kind of chiropractor they are now in terms of their analysis or approach? It'll help them be better next week.
Yeah. So I think, well, first off, I don't think I've ever met a chiropractor who didn't argue or at least, you know, was okay and on board with the fact that that is the most impactful neurological area of the spine. If we're just strictly talking neurology, somebody who suffers if we're just talking just pure neurology, if you have a trauma to your lower back and then you have a trauma to your upper neck, I think we can all agree that the one to the upper neck is going to be much more detrimental to human health life expression. So I've never met anyone who didn't say, hey, a lot of the miracle cases I see in my office are in the area of the upper cervical spine. Most people will be in agreement with that. So if we understand that, in my opinion, it's the area that we must have the best analysis and emphasis on. Because honestly, it's the area also that other practitioners don't have a particular emphasis on. It's interesting because if you've ever seen an MRI walk into your office, have you ever seen an MRI that they actually make a determination on CO, C1, C2? I've never actually seen one. They never comment on CO, C1, C2 on an MRI. I just looked at a couple this past week. It's always C3 and below. They start commenting on the degeneration and the disc bulges, but they never make a comment on the upper cervical spine, I've noticed. Interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
It is. And the reason they don't, and patients will ask me this, how come on my MRI there's no mention of the upper cervical spine? And it's very simple. It's because most people don't understand it. And so in the medical field, and so if you can own it and if you can understand it better than anyone, it opens up doors and windows to people and patients who literally are searching for somebody who can give them an answer as it relates to whatever their ailment is. And you know, one of the things I'm really excited to talk to people about at Mile High is this concept of thermography and how it's a beautiful blend of the science and the philosophy of what do we know to be true with the art of chiropractic and how it can really up your game as it relates to measuring thermal energy and thermal temperature as it, and if you understand where that mechanism is controlled from, which is the brainstem, and what an upper cervical misalignment can alter in that and how you can measure it, it can really up your game as far as your certainty goes. And if you have certainty, you're matching what the patient has, which is faith. They're coming into your office with faith. I've lost all hope that this problem will ever be fixed. And so I'm coming to you on faith. Well, if you have certainty, which is the opposite of faith, it's a beautiful blend of someone understanding I'm in the right place, first and foremost. Secondly, I'm willing to pay a lot of money and invest a lot of time to explore this because I understand your certainty in this area. And so, you know, I think the reason it's so important is because it's the area that's very little looked at when it comes to people's health, regardless of what they're dealing with, whether it's Parkinson's all the way down to neck pain, migraines. Doesn't matter what it is. Most people have never, in my experience, if you were to ask them, have you ever had your upper cervical spine properly evaluated? Have you ever had your central nervous system properly evaluated? Well, you know, I've had MRIs, I've had CTs. So Mary, I'm just going to stop you there. Much like an EKG measures heart function, an EEG measures brain function, this measures your central nerve system function. Those other methods of analysis are just looking for pathologies. And while this type of analysis doesn't tell us where the problem is, it just tells us if and when there's a problem and if it's necessary for us to investigate this. And ultimately, it's going to identify you as a candidate for care in our office. And if we find that to be the case, this is going to be the best place for you. And the best thing for you is this office. And so I just think that if people are able to communicate that from the lens of the upper cervical spine effectively, you're hitting people in a place, and especially in today's world, Danny, I think people understand this word testing. I think this word testing, it's an interesting one.
Yeah.
You know, people are used to this. And by the way, when they get tested, they hope the result is a negative. And so when they're sick, though, and they come to you and they're getting a testing done, they want it to be positive because that means you can help them. But they understand the word. And so that's why I'm pumped. I mean, if you understand that this type of testing can look at the upper cervical spine specifically as an indicator and objectively, then I think what it does is it adds an extra level of certainty, an extra level of confidence in your technique, regardless of whether it's upper cervical emphysis or not, whether you start there and move down or whether you start down and move up. It doesn't really matter. Because it all just depends on your indicators, right? I use thermography because that's a brainstem indicator.
Right.
If you use leg links, if you use palpation, muscle tone, SEMG, surface, whatever it is, as long as it's blending with the science, and that's the science portion, backs up the philosophical technique component, well, then it doesn't matter. But on Monday, I would tell you, look into the upper cervical spine, understand its idiosyncrasies, the anomalies that can occur there, the things people can present with, the head traumas, these people need to be cared for. And if you're that person for them in their town, what you're going to offer them is a lens no one looks at them through and ultimately gives them results no one else can give them.
You know, I got to say something about that. So a couple things. You said so many brilliant things there. One of the things about how hard to find a chiropractor that does not value the importance of the upper cervical spine and know that it's important for the person's total spinal health integrity and their total health period area. So for example, I focus on network spinal care. And so most people don't realize that it's actually an upper cervically focused approach. You know, something like 75% of the care is focused on that area. Most people don't necessarily realize that. And it's probably true in other approaches as well. And instrumentation, you know, it's so interesting. I've had people leave us online reviews in our office about how it was so high tech, you know, and that they thought it was, you know, that we were using biometrics. They actually put in an online review that we're measuring biometrics. People are very tied into that. And that's not a word I would have used in my clinic, you know, but I was kind of impressed that they did. People do things like this. Like I use a Whoop. I know your friend Sean Dill uses one.
Yep.
Like measure their heart rate variability. People are dialed into knowing what's going on with their body and their health and measuring that. They're doing all kinds of wearable things about that. So when you're doing something that's about their spine and nerve system and you're not having some kind of objective outcome assessment, it doesn't match the current culture. You're under delivering in their eyes right now. If they're a person that values their health, as someone who wants to kind of band-aid short-term care. And so that thermography portion is so important. At what point can you share anything about using thermography where it was, a place in taking care of people? You said, this is, I'm so grateful I have this information, like something that maybe you revealed, like, this is, I would have not wanted to take care of this person. I would have missed this.
Yeah. Well, every day. But, I think the biggest thing, and this is one of the things I want to stress to a lot of docs that are listening, is if you feel like you're at a place where, you know, one of the things that I hear a lot is burnout in chiropractors, as far as I'm just burnt out taking care of people. And I'm here to tell you that it's because you live in a pain-based clinical model.
That's true.
It's very true. Here's the thing, is if you are looking for a way to pull yourself out of the cesspool of pain-based clinical care and want to move yourself, in other words, my patients don't get it. It's not all about pain. Listen, if that is how you feel, that is a direct reflection on you, and it is your problem, not theirs. Mm-hmm. The way that you move out of a pain-based model is to move into a function-based model. People understand that. Thermography is a functional tool to assess the function of the nerve system. So I'll just use this as an example, and it happens every single day. I tell people, Mary, if you had a curve in your spine and we gave you a correction to your upper cervical spine and your spine began to straighten because your central nerve system began to function, do you think that would cause symptoms? And her answer is going to be every time. Well, absolutely. Right. So you see now why we would never base anything we do in this clinic off how you feel, but solely on how you function.
Right.
Oh, yeah. So we use this type of technology to assess function, because what we care about is how you function. On any given day, the goal is to get you to function. More importantly, if you come into our office and we run the testing and you are functioning at your highest capacity, an adjustment is not necessary for you today. And they still pay for that. Why? Because they're paying for the check. They're paying for the check of the function of my system, not for the adjustment, which is different for us versus any other profession out there. We check for the check. We charge for the check for the presence or absence of the vertebral subluxation, which is a loss of function in the nerve system. Thermography detects that. More importantly, will reveal to you if indeed you are removing that. So that's what I think is interesting, is if you want to move from a pain-based perspective and be happier in practice and take care of people who understand the value is in that you are providing function to their central nerve systems, you need to incorporate something like a thermography that you're utilizing every visit that removes that barrier. You're going to be happier. You're going to see greater outcomes. Your patients are going to retain longer because they understand the value of what it is that you provide, which is beyond pain relief. They understand, like, my function of my nerve system is a valuable thing. I need to assess and spend money and the value of doing that, because I understand the outcome it's going to provide for me. And so every single day I have got people that come in. They may come in with neck pain, headache. I take care of a lot of ALS, MS, migraine patients, and they're there to function better. And so I just tell them, hey, listen, so there's going to be days you come in here and you're going to not feel the greatest, but you're going to be functioning at your best. And so what you're going to base that off is the function of how this system's performing. And so if Joe never comes into me and says, hey doc, I got excruciating low back, and I'm just going to stop him and say, Joe, you're biasing the scan I'm fixing to take, because as a compassionate healthcare provider, I'm now going to want to find a way to adjust you, and that may not be what's best for you. So let's hold off on the symptom, telling me how that is till after I run the scan. And then once I've run the scan and make a clinical determination, then we can talk about that. Once you condition your patients to do that, they can't bias you. And they understand that this is what I'm paying for, is an analysis, an assessment for a necessity, not based off my symptoms. And in today's world, where people understand I can come in and test positive and have no symptoms, and I can also come in and test negative and be sick as a dog, they understand they don't always match. They don't always match.
Right. Yes. And actually, I've through all of what's happened during the last 2 years with COVID, I've thought that so many times. Like, this is just help people understand that you can have a positive test and have no symptoms, and I'll tell you, during thermography, every time I may use or interpret thermography differently than you do. However, I utilize it. I think objective outcome assessments are vital. And other people may use thermography different than you and I. However, of times in my 20 plus years of taking care of people, where the thermography did not change. There's only, I can think of on one hand, I could count the times that it was not, the pattern was not changing. Every single time the person had we sent them out to get further health assessments, and it found out that they had pathology. Every single time they had some kind of pathology when their pattern wasn't changing. You know,
limitation of matter 101.
Right, right. So it tells you how much it is then having being accountable. Chiropractors have such a problem with accountability for, are they actually delivering the care that they're delivering? So it's something that's vital for all of us to embrace if we're going to deliver clinically excellent care. With you, clinical excellence is a big term in my world. What for you helps define delivering clinically excellent care?
Oh man, that's such a great question. I think it's clinical excellence is what defines, for me, it's if what defines results in your office, and what clinical tools do you do to elicit that you have gotten there? In other words, for a long time, you know, when I would read back in clinical research controlled trials, when it comes to BJ Palmer, he would release patients from the research clinic who were symptomatically, by all senses and accounts, worse than they came in to the clinic, but their graphs were clear. So for me, clinical excellence is a full spine thermal scan from the tailbone to the top of the neck that is clear with less than 0.3 degrees Celsius difference in thermal temperature regulation, which indicates zero presence of neuropathophysiology. That for me is the result I'm looking to gain for a patient through a corrective care program in my office. If I can attain that, the person's subjective complaints or reasons for coming into the office will be attained. Here's where it gets missed. Yes, love that model. Right? Like gold right there. Like, so the thing is most people would say clinical excellence is achieving a pain-free life for somebody, right? Or it's all focused around this pain model or this, right. Or this, you know, for me, clinical excellence is removing vertebral subluxation and actually objectifying that you've done it and achieving the outcome the patient came into your office, what that allowed them to achieve. So if it's mom trying to be a better mom and her migraines are inhibiting that, and it's the vertebral subluxation that's causing it, and I've removed that and I have objective proof of that, and it led to Mary's outcome, that is clinical excellence to me. It's not about, you know, and here's the thing. I mean, I've like you said, if Mary has a pathology and I clear the vertebral subluxation and her sleep improves, her energy improves, but her migraines don't, and I refer out and we locate a benign tumor that needs to be removed in the temporal lobe that then co-managed gets her to the point she tries to get to, that can be clinical excellence. What I don't define clinical excellence by, though, is a pain-based model, which is what most people do. Clinical excellence to me is A, saying you're doing what you're doing and a way to objectify it, and it resulting in a change in somebody's life as a result from a correction to their spine.
Yeah, and I'm on the same page with you. For sure, which is probably part of why both of us really value the IFCO, the International Federation of Chiropractors and Organizations. Can you say something about the IFCO? Tell us a little bit more about it. So people, because there are probably people watching and listening to this that aren't familiar with it.
Yeah, you know, I've been to and talked to several chiropractors just in taking on this role over the last year or so, and a lot of them ask that question, and I just say it very simply. We as chiropractors, what we hold unique and distinct is the vertebral subluxation complex and our ability to detect, locate, and remove it. That is what we do better than anyone, and it's the only thing we do, and it's the only profession in the entire international world itself that does that. We as an organization provide all resource and efforts into the protection and the promotion of that, both as a doctor's ability to do that in clinical practice and as a patient's ability to receive it, which I would argue is even more important. I want you to imagine for a second that your great grandkids, or maybe your kids, walk into a chiropractic office one day here in about 10 years, and they cannot be assessed for vertebral subluxation because it does not exist in the clinical scope of practice in their state. And I'm here to tell you that that is a reality. That is something that can happen. But the IFCO, in our efforts, is not going to allow it, because we as an organization are dedicated to that not coming to fruition. Now, if you're one of those out there says, well, why should I join? What's in it for me? That's what's in it for you, is to make sure that your kids never have to see that happen. Because you have to, you know, and I talk about this all the time, Danny, but I think, you know, maybe this is the time it gets through. It truly is. How, just as a takeaway, as a listener, as a takeaway, where do you put on the hierarchy the vertebral subluxation complex as the as a detriment to human life? Do you put it above cancer? Do you put it above COVID? Do you put it above the common cough? Where is it on your hierarchy? And what I've found is the higher that people understand it to be detrimental to the human health expression, the more dedicated they are to finding it and removing it, and the better they offer their patients as it relates to clinical care. I find that a lot of people talk about the vertebral subluxation but don't respect it. Yeah. It's just a word, right? But the IFCO, we're dedicated to making sure that it's important. We recognize it as an important thing. It stays in the scope of practice internationally because we understand the detriment it has on the human population. I mean, listen, what I can't help but wonder is how many people around the world have died of COVID because they had vertebral subluxation recently, because it never got detected. It never got corrected. And could their life have been improved? And could they have made it through the other side of that had they been clear of vertebral subluxation? Of course, we'll never know. But I put the vertebral subluxation so high on my totem pole of health conditions because I've seen what it can do for people when it's removed. And so for you out there, if you're someone saying, hey, why should I join? That's why you should join, is because what it's doing is it's directly supporting your ability to do what's important to you in your office. And then you're congruent with the universe. And if you can be congruent with the universe in your support, like supporting Mile High because it supports you, supporting the IFCO because it supports you. Now, don't go support something that directly impacts your negativity, like go and support someone who just, you know, supports the very thing that's your demise either. But I can tell you this, as long as I'm aboard the IFCO, that's what we will stand for. That's what we will do. And we won't let you down with your membership. And we would love to have you.
You know, I'm glad you said one of the many things I'm glad I just heard you say. I don't know if you know this. When I first came into the chiropractic world, in terms of my just being conscious of it, Donnie Epstein was on the FSCO board, which was the precursor to the IFCO is the FSCO,
which Reggie Gold founded.
Yeah, right.
Most people don't know that.
Yeah, and he was on that at that point, and he said something that you just echoed really well. He said that sadly, most chiropractors do not have enough reverence for both the subluxation in terms of the damage it can do, and enough reverence for the adjustment in terms of how much impact it can make, and don't have enough reverence for what it is they do as an art, which is sad. It's so phenomenal. To me, the most impactful healing art in the history of humanity. And I do not want to see it at all disappear, which is why we're focusing on the art this year. Because as you said, I was having this thought over and over again. It's seemingly becoming such a lost art. Fred, I think our friend Scott Garber said he wanted to do a book called The Lost Art.
He does.
Yeah. and I hope it doesn't become lost. And so that's why we're doing this. Can you say anything more specifically? Oh, no pun intended. Can you say anything more specifically about the art of the specific analysis package and what's taught?
Yeah. So the art of the specific is the technique that's utilized within the specific chiropractic centers, but not the other way around. We have a lot of docs who come and learn the art of the specific and then practice in their own models. And so the art of the specific is a technique analysis in a knee chest solid headpiece world. We use biomechanical motion x-ray analysis. We teach thermographic pattern analysis and then the knee chest adjustment and management of people through that model of care. One of the things that really bugs me, Danny, and I have a pet peeve that I'm just going to go ahead and share with your viewership and hope they enjoy this. I have never understood this idea that, listen, I am all for BJ Palmer. I reverence BJ. I think he was the developer of the profession that we know. The art of the specific, what we believe is that it would be a slap in BJ Palmer's face to be doing the exact same thing in the exact same way that BJ did it in 1930. Mm-hmm. Why? Because you've never seen a golfer who uses the same exact club that Arnold Palmer used in 1950. Like you, that wouldn't make sense because the game has evolved. We know have better technology, we have better clubs, but we still can look upon, you know, and look back at where we used to be in order to see where we are today. The Art of the Specific has taken the upper cervical world in volume 18 as far as the adjustment specific, the subluxation specific, the adjustment specific, and taken what BJ used to do, which was wedge line drawings. And he would look at very sick cases, and we've understood where he was at that time. And based on new technology and new information, have evolved that type of work into the same work, but more evolved with the times. So we use a Titron instead of an NCM. And there's reasons for that. It measures two different types of heat. It gives you different types of information. I'm a believer that if BJ Palmer was around today, he would be using the Titron, but it wasn't available back then. Here's what I've never understood. People who say we do it like BJ did. Well, if you're doing it like BJ did, I think he would walk right up to you and slap you in the face and say, why? You have so much more info. If you have not evolved the work, BJ was about evolution. He was about understanding. He was about moving the needle forward with the better understanding. He was all about progressing the profession. So at the Art of the Specific, we believe we have the most modernized look at the knee, chest, upper cervical work in the way that we analyze. We can be able to answer all the questions that today's information has presented us. Why use a Titron, not an NCM? Why use biomechanical x-rays on APOMs instead of lateral static? There's a reason for that. Why do we use a solid head piece, not a drop head piece? There's a reason for that. Like it's a more modernized movement towards our, you know, we now know that over 70% of the time, lateral masses are asymmetrical in the atlas. Well, then if you can elicit motion, I can get more information. There's a reason for that. See, that's why it's blended things like CBCT now, which I know there's going to be some conversation at Mile High, and it's why you should be at Mile High. It's going to be talking about these things. The progression from the old OG work, as I call it, in volume 18, up into today's understanding of the upper cervical world and the analysis of it is the Art of the Specific. And so we have students, docs who've been practicing it a long time, all the way to people who are just dipping their toes in the water and everywhere in between. And we're all on a different journey. And we're also just a believer that we're not going to condemn people based on where they are in their journey, right? It's just taking everyone from a level of where they are to a better understanding, which is why the Enzo is the Art of the Specifics logo. Is it's Kaizen. It's the representative that the full circle never closes, that right. The journey to mastery continues until you hit your deathbed. And the last thing I will say is I feel like there should be a rule, Danny, that if you would not be comfortable with BJ Palmer shadowing you in your clinic presently today, then you should not be able to wear a BJ Palmer shirt.
Well, you know, it's interesting you said about not advancing. Many years ago, I think it was when I was a student, Reggie Gold did this presentation in his Reggie Gold style with his foot up on the chair and with a whiteboard, or not a whiteboard, a pad behind him. Uh-huh. And he drew this thing. He said, the worst thing that BJ Palmer did was that he died. And he said right. That sadly, so many people camp at the graveyards of their ancestors. And he drew this little tree of Gonstead and BJ and this. He said people camp at that point of where they were at whatever year. And like it's a dogma that we have to do exactly what was then, which is it's a travesty. You know,
absolutely.
It'd be like saying, hey, you know what? I'm going to use a Sony Walkman right now. And that is not a disservice to say I'm going to use an iPhone, you know, or whatever it might be.
Makes no sense in any other world except for chiropractic.
Exactly. And there's advancement as long as you're doing that advancement, holding the foundational principles and values intact. Versus absolutely. Making it a different profession, you know, which is so sadly people, like you say, it's chasing a sin. Well, you're going into a different profession. That's not advancing. That's going backwards if you're going to become a different healing art. So again, that's why I do highly recommend study the upper cervical spine. One of the great resources is the Art of Specific programs. And become a member of the IFCO, whether you're a doctor or a student, and support the making sure that we are guarding the sacred trust in terms of what's going on politically and legally. Because That's vital if you want to make sure your grandkids can get care, you know, versus that you dedicate your life to something and they don't even know what it is because it doesn't exist anymore.
And that is more of a reality than people appreciate currently.
Yeah, I know. It's one of the things that keeps me up at night, you know?
Me as well. I didn't ever envision myself being in politics, Danny, I got to tell you. But the reason that I do at the ripe age of 32 is because it's going to be over my dead body that somebody takes VSC out of the scope of practice in a state. It's currently already being taken out of the universities. That's the first step. They're removing X-ray in other countries, removing subluxation lexicon from schools. It's here, folks. It's time to step up, get to Mile High, get around people, support the organizations you need to support. Do not wait to be dealt a right blow to try to deal a left, because I'm here to tell you the right blow will be basked and it will shake you, and then it's too late.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, we're excited to have you at Mile High. We're excited that all that you do and grateful for all you're doing for chiropractic. And I know what that road is like when you're organizing office and so many other things. So kudos to you for taking up so many things. And hey, I want to also encourage people to support Grant Dennis and the other in his things. If this has inspired you to be involved with, go up to him at Mile High and say, hey, how can I help? So is there any last thing that you'd like to share with our audience?
Yeah, I think the last thing is just a sense of urgency. You know, I think that one of the things that has been a theme for me especially in this year, but certainly in the second half of the year, is controlled urgency. I think that there's this sense of, well, somebody else will do it. You know, somebody else will support the IFCO. Somebody else can go to Mile High and grab the good stuff as it relates to the art, and they'll bring it back to me, right? Or I'll just listen. Controlled urgency, show up, invest in yourself, because if you don't, we need every single person. The harvest is plenty, but the workers are few. We need workers, and we need people to show up and help us with this harvest. What do I mean by the harvest? Getting to the people that need to hear the message, because folks, here's the deal. Humanity as we know it is on the line, chiropractic as we know it is on the line, and it's time for us to show up and have a controlled urgency. Please come up to me and say hi at Mile High. I'd love to chat with you and talk with you and see where we can plug you in and how you can help us with the harvest. And Danny, I appreciate your time and having me on. I hope they found this valuable, and I look forward to meeting everyone at Mile High.
We appreciate you, and we appreciate seeing you on higher ground. And everyone, make sure you hook up with the Art of the Specific and the IFCO. And definitely talk to Dr. Grant more when you're there, and share this podcast with others. Hit subscribe. And if you have not reserved your seats for Mile High 2021, are you living under a rock? Is what I'm going to ask you. Go ahead, hit milehighchiro.org. You can get the details. And you want to be in community and connected with other rock star teams from around the world, as well as up level your level of the art. Seriously, the reason why we selected this theme is I had a lot of calling around. It was that, you know what, with all that's gone on in the world, it's right now a very good time for us to focus that we deliver the goods better than before, rather than, you know, shout at all this, the injustices that are going on. Well, let's just be better at what we do. So thank you. And we'll see you all in Colorado in September.